The following program may contain material that is unsuitable for some audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Aftermath Radio should not be considered a substitute for services provided by a licensed mental health professional. Good afternoon and welcome to Aftermath Radio, brought to you live from the K-Beach radio station at Cal State Long Beach.
Did you press the button? Did you press it?
Yes.
I can't hear myself. I can hear you just fine.
Oh, this is going to be a problem.
This is going to be a great show if it starts like this. Yeah, there it is.
There it is.
Okay. Fantastic.
There we go.
By the way, the sound that you heard before the music was Gigi Barr's face hitting the microphone. I thought that was pretty entertaining.
I don't think our mics are on. So.
It was totally live.
Yeah,
totally.
It was.
Call in if you heard Gigi Barr's face hit the microphone.
Oh, my God.
All right, here we are. Happy 2012, Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Cal State Long Beach. If you would like to speak with us, you want me to go ahead and do it?
Yes.
Okay. Call us, area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. You can Skype us at aftermath.radio, email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com, and as always, our website, aftermathradio.org, where you may hear any of our podcasts at any time you want. They're all archived there for you, for your listening enjoyment. And so here we are, the first show of 2012, and you guys are smiling?
We are.
How was your break? Either
Way
of you.
Too short.
Too short?
And you know what? It's funny. When you go to Christmas break, you're like, oh, a month? Month and a week?
Sounds like a long time, right?
Yep. It goes by faster than a weekend.
Yeah. For me, it seemed like I had a lot of work to do to finish the last semester. Like, I just couldn't get done with it.
Yeah.
And then everything else sort of going on. All right. So, Aftermath Radio, where we talk about all things psychopathic. And today, we have, later on the show, we have Dr. Dave Cawson coming on talking about genetics. And actually, genetic versus environmental factors in psychopathy. It's always great to have Dave on. And before that, just a couple, two things, really. The first is, I'm wondering, have you guys been, you guys pay attention to the news, right? I'm wondering if the Southern California area is now the new haven for psychopathic activity. And I say that because we have the story about the elementary school teacher. Did you hear about that?
Yeah, there's two of them, right?
There's two teachers at the same school who have been sexually assaulting children. And I believe third grade children, and one of them actually in a really disturbed kind of way, which I'm not going to get into right now. We've got the serial killer in Orange County that they just caught.
Which one?
I think his last name's Ocampo, the former Iraq war vet, killing homeless people. You guys didn't hear about that?
Yeah, I heard it. I heard about
We've got bodies turning up on the side of the freeway, right? So what's going on? I mean, Florida used to be, according to this show, the capital of psychopathy, followed closely by England. But now I think we're back in the running again.
Oh, man.
Of course, we don't know that they're psychopaths. Hey, do we have the disclaimer, by the way? Do you have that queued up?
I have the disclaimer with the jingle.
Not so. Well, maybe.
That's what? For Christmas.
Okay.
I don't think that's a good idea.
All right. Well, we have a disclaimer. We're not diagnosing anyone as a psychopath necessarily, but we better get a clean version of that.
Yes, we will.
I promised Paul Babiak, who, by the way, listens to the show with his wife and also did that disclaimer, that I would put different music underneath it every week, and he seems to be okay with that. Okay, so we'll keep you posted on everything psychopathic going on here in Southern California. And certainly around the world as it comes into us. Over the break, did get a lot of emails and voice messages, so we appreciate those. Keep those coming. I also got an email from the management at K-Beach.
Same.
Related to the Twitter.
Oh, okay.
Right. So I thought I'd read that for you folks because we're going to need your help on something here on Aftermath Radio 2012. It looks like we're up in our game a little bit. So here's the emails from management at K-Beach. hey all, blah, 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 blah. But then it goes into, this is the fourth point on a list of 5 points, right? Point number four says, tweet, tweet, tweet. We are trying to increase Twitter followers. You need to tweet and retweet, so be sure you're following us. Also, the computer in studio has the Twitter account already signed in. You must tweet that your show is on at least once during your time slot.
Which I already did, so.
Did you?
Yeah, I tweeted once.
Okay. Some people even tweet each song. Can we do that?
We don't have songs.
All right.
Each guest.
Maybe we'll.
Yeah,
okay.
I think that's a good idea.
Tweets will automatically post on the Facebook wall. Now, I have to confess, I am Twitter illiterate. Mm. I don't do the Twitter. I have a hard time understanding the Twitter, to be honest with you. It's just one more thing for me that's going to rope me into, you know, it's one more thing I have to do. If somebody right. tweets me, that I feel I have to tweet back or whatever. Right. But that's not to say, I guess, according to management here at the station, it's probably a really good way of building a following for a radio show. So Gigi Barr has created a Twitter account for us at Aftermath Radio.
Yes. Okay. So first, make sure you follow KBeach_radio, and that's the just basically KBeach Radio in general. And then you can follow us at Aftermath Radio, and that's all one word. So, I mean, we would really like some followers since we are new.
So for those Twitter illiterates like me, so people will tweet in as we're broadcasting, or will we tweet out, or will it be both, like a two-way?
It could be
tweeting.
A two-way.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So listeners, if you're out there right now, we need sort of a test run. We need to know that we're doing it right because I think none of us really have much experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
So what
it's
did
not
you,
my favorite.
What did you tweet out? Can you say, or is that confidential information?
Oh, I just said tune in to Aftermath Radio right now. And our first tweet was earlier this afternoon when we said that we were back on the air today. So
good. And did we get any responses?
No, unfortunately not.
When we start getting followers, I think it'll be a good idea to have them tweet easy, quick, fast questions to our
account. Would be great.
Yeah.
Because it's a live feed, so we'll be able to answer them instantly.
Right. Preferably yes-no questions.
Right.
No, I'm just kidding. Or multiple choice. If you lay out the A, B, C, we'll gladly answer those. No. Tweet us with any questions you have. We're happy to. It's much easier for me to talk through an answer than it is me to type out an answer. I know
right.
that. Mm-hmm. So I'll gladly wax poetic on anything that comes tweeted in.
Love it.
Is there some sort of sound effect that happens when that
tweet tweet
tweet? I can get a bird
is there a better one?
I'll work on that for next week.
All right, so tweet us, and then we got the thing about the Facebook, and we really haven't sort of sold the Facebook, have we? I mean, we have a Facebook page, right?
Yeah, it's been there for a while, Dr.
But we really don't mention it. How do we get on the Facebook, or how does one who's following us Facebook us? You know how to do this, don't you?
Yeah, it's been a while since we've accessed the Facebook site because we're waiting on information.
Maybe thousands of people are trying to get a hold of us through Facebook. And
no, actually, the Aftermath Radio page is up, so they can like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
But there's just not much on there just yet.
Right, because it's a work in progress.
Yes.
Right.
Okay. So. I like it, but that's not what you mean by like it, right?
No.
I had this conversation.
You have to have a Facebook account.
Had this conversation with my son, in fact, yesterday about liking on Facebook, and I played the whole like naive old dad thing. You know what I mean? Liking, what does that mean? And so he explained it to me. Anyway, so yeah, like us on Facebook, tweet us, and we will continue to grow this conversation, and hopefully get some more listeners along the way.
I mean, I just got a text right now from my friend who said he's going to make a Twitter just to follow us.
So that's
wow.
Yeah.
That's very nice.
That's very nice.
He's going to make
a
Twitter. It's a he or a she?
It's a he. Huh? It's my brother's best friend. Hi, Danny.
Oh, she just outed him on the radio. Let's have him call in.
I don't think he'll call in.
Is he of sound mind, this Danny?
Yes.
Yeah. Does he dig you?
No, he's basically my little brother.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
He's an adopted member
do
of our family.
You tell him to.
I know.
So, Danny, go get 10 of your friends. Gigi said you find 10 of your friends and have them all start Twitter accounts.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. That's
okay.
Good radio. All right. So yeah, we're entering this new this age of new media. And actually, I'm pretty excited about it. So, all right. We are coming up to a commercial. I guess I'm excited about the new season here, although I really haven't Done a lot of work in terms of lining folks up. Certainly we'll have our usual cast of characters, which are always very exciting. And then if you folks have someone you're interested in hearing from, definitely let us know. And we'll do our best to try to get them on as well. I mean, we sort of have an idea of the folks that you might want to listen to, but maybe you have some different ideas, and we're all about sort of spreading the knowledge and getting folks on that will provide interesting content. So let us know suggestions and comments in terms of folks you would like to hear from. I don't have a lot of friends myself, but I have friends who have friends, right? Who may know some more about psychopathy than I do. All right. Speaking of that, we'll have Dr. Dave Kossin coming on at the bottom of the hour, talking about genetic environmental factors related to psychopathy. This is Aftermath Radio here on K-Beach. We will be right back.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Aftermath Radio, Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. If you'd like to speak with us, please do call us, area code 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. Email us at aftermathradio at kbeach.com. And Chant, how do they tweet us?
They tweet us at Aftermath Radio.
That's so simple, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, it's just after
maybe I should get on board with this whole Twitter thing.
No, it's easier for them to find us.
Okay.
So
very good. No, I'm not knocking it. I'm not knocking it. Okay, we have on the line Sally.
Hello, yes.
Is she there?
I'm here.
Let's try this again.
Sally, are you there?
I'm here.
There we go.
She was hiding from me for a second.
I was hiding then.
How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Good, good. Thanks so much for calling in. Now, let's see, we have so much to talk to you about today, and I'm not sure quite how to get it going, but you've been on the show before, and just very briefly, what was your situation or the nature of the relationship you were in?
The nature of the relationship I was in was a 13-year marriage, but it has almost spanned 20 years, so, you know, from beginning to now. I just realized last week, in fact, that we're coming up on 20 years involved with person
and this,
that I've spoken of.
And this person was someone you believe to have psychopathic features or perhaps even be a psychopath?
Correct.
Okay.
Again, no formal diagnosis.
No formal diagnosis, right.
I've said before, but definitely
right.
Signs pointing in that direction.
Okay, so you and I, we had a conversation over the weekend, and you wanted to kind of reframe, I guess, your story now and provide some more information.
Okay.
So shall I just let you do that?
I guess so. I guess I'm ready to come out of the closet.
Okay.
I guess as it said. My name is Linda Hartunian Almas, and I am on the executive committee of Aftermath. I am also sitting on the board of directors of Aftermath Surviving Psychopathy. I'm serving as the treasurer and volunteer coordinator. And surprise, we kind of, we're where you least expect to find us, I guess. Survivors come from a variety of backgrounds, and I kind of got started. My interest in psychopathy started as a result of my personal experiences, yet it has grown into, grown into what I'm beginning to do professionally as well. So, I started out kind of like much any other victim, kind of, and went through the stages. Started out as a victim looking for answers. Eventually, in time, you become a survivor. And eventually, as a survivor, I decided, you know what? I got into this, and I was kind of roped into the situation because I didn't know what I was dealing with, and I didn't know the traits to look for. I just wasn't educated on psychopathy. And so that kind of became my mission and kind of my driving force in life, was to begin this educational campaign and share what I've lived and share what I know and try to teach people so that the cycle of abuse and the cycle of, it's a nasty situation to be involved in. And so that we can kind of break the cycle, and at least if, I feel like if I help one person, if I help a group of people, if I start out acting locally and it turns into something more global, that would be wonderful. Because this is really important, and the lives that it touches, it can really dim them significantly. So I just wanted to share that and kind of come clean and let everyone know who I really am.
Right. And you've been doing such good work with the foundation in general. But I think on the show, too, you've kind of given a voice to a unique kind of perspective or a unique situation. And we've had folks that have sort of, I think for some, you know, for whatever reason, how am I put it? They're kind of connected to you in a way, or connected with you in a way.
Right.
Your story speaks to them. And so that's why it's always such a pleasure having you on. And I'm, in terms of keeping your identity secret, well, we all know that that's, you know, our utmost concern. And you'd mentioned some of the legal problems you've been having, and we didn't want to jeopardize certainly your safety or, you know, your legal case. But it looks like things have sort of come to a close, at least for now.
Right.
And so, it, you know, moving on, it's sort of a message that we are about here at Aftermath, you know, is picking up the pieces and keeping going. And that's what you're doing. And it sounds like you're doing a bunch of very positive things with your life now, you know, kind of as using this whole experience as a foundation.
Right. It really has been. It's the springboard for the second half of my life, frankly. You know, when I realized what I was dealing with, like I said, I started out just talking to people and Google searching and realizing what the traits and some of the characteristics that I was dealing with. Concurrently, I was also in graduate school. And interestingly, my graduate degree is in learning and behavior. And so I was just starting the track of my behavior courses. And some of the things we were learning about in school and some of the things that I was dealing with professionally, it was jiving. It was just making sense. They were fitting together. So, yes, this is it's important because it doesn't matter who the person with these features or traits are in your life. It could be a mother, father, brother, sister, any sort of family member, spouse, romantic relationship, you name it. The impact has the potential to be pretty severe. And negative. And so I've always kind of felt like we need to make positive from a bad situation. And so that's what I'm aiming to do. And that's why I speak. That's why I will continue to speak. And I just kind of felt that it was time to, you know, with being out of court now, time to come clean. And I'm starting to give some lectures to law enforcement, both the dispatchers and hopefully police. Have an engagement coming up right around the corner, actually, and educating the people on the front line, like what some of these situations, like the abuse situations, look like, some of the traits to look for, really just spreading the word.
What's the response been amongst the law enforcement crowd that you've been speaking to? Because I think that's a great idea, great place to start.
It is a great place to start because, as you know, and as many people who deal with people with psychopathic features, you don't always know what it is you're walking into, and you don't always know what it is you're looking at. Sometimes it's the quote-unquote victim that comes off looking hysterical because the psychopath is very calm, cool, and collected. They have the bonus of not having that emotional tie, if you look at it that way.
Right.
But you know what I mean? The victim may appear hysterical. Well, it's very important for the dispatcher taking that initial 911 phone call or for the police arriving on the scene to understand that everything isn't necessarily always what it appears, to be able to go in there and actually assess the situation more accurately and kind of go from there. And that's why I think the education for the people on the front lines, as well as the people who, once this turns into a court or legal situation, need to be educated.
Right, and the organization's been scheduled to start doing workshops for judges.
Yes,
and that's an exciting step for us.
That's very exciting, and again, a passion of mine working on that committee, because I think that this is a group of people that absolutely, I've said it before, I think that they're starting to get it better than in the past, but just really a group of people that can stand to definitely stand to learn something and become educated on what some of these traits look like and what to look for when making very important decisions that impact people's lives pretty significantly.
Right, right. Well, it's got a few more minutes left, but I guess as I always do, you know, in terms of words of advice that you might offer to folks that are listening, maybe even given your sort of new outlook on life now.
Mm-hmm. Words of advice?
Right, exactly.
I guess just keep going. Just keep going. Work as hard as you possibly can to, you know, stay positive. I know that that is not, it's easier said than done. That is not necessarily easy to do on a daily basis, but really it is the most important thing. Don't let them get you down. They will try to reinvent new and different ways to continue to come after you. But just stay strong and believe in yourself and know that you have the power to understand and then to get through it. Because really, with that understanding comes the power. Even some of the, you know, the things that get said and done to try to hurt you, if you realize that it's coming from a place of disorder, you can rise above that.
Right. And then the whole sort of reaching out and even speaking and educating, have you found that to be therapeutic or helpful? Or?
I don't know that it's necessarily been therapeutic. I feel very good knowing that I can, the same sense of calm that came over me when I realized what was happening. I've watched other people and friends and just people that I've gotten to know struggle with some of the same things that I struggled with. And when you talk about it and when you say, you know, hey, does the person that you're dealing with exhibit such and such and such traits, and kind of maybe go down the hair checklist or even just share some of the books. You know, I think I've read everything that exists on psychopathy. I've read it. And depending on who you're dealing with, maybe, loaning the books out.
Right.
When you can educate other people and they have that sense of calm that comes with the understanding, that's what really feels good, because you know that you've just affected somebody's life very positively.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. There's sort of a healing quality to being involved in that. Great.
Yeah.
Okay, so Linda, we go forth then into this new year, retiring your old identity and looking forward to hearing from your new one.
Absolutely. Thank you, as always.
Thanks so much for calling in, and we'll speak to you pretty soon.
Sounds good.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
Hey, we made it back, didn't we? Aftermath Radio. Dr. Robert Shugg, Assistant Professor of Criminal Justice and Forensic Psychology here at Long Beach State. Please do call us at 562-912-3541. That's 562-912-3541. Or Skype us at aftermath.radio. Or tweet us where? One of you?
At Aftermath Radio.
That's it?
That's
it. They just
it.
Type in Aftermath Radio? Excellent.
That's
okay.
It. One word.
We have on the line Dr. Dave Costin. Dave, are you there?
I am.
Oh,
hi.
Excellent. Let's get the introductions out of the way then. Dr. Dave Costin, professor of psychology at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science. He's one of the co-authors of the Psychopathy Checklist Youth Version and has authored over 50 articles on psychopathy. His research focuses primarily on the cognitive, emotional, and interpersonal mechanisms underlying psychopathy. Welcome, Dave.
Thanks.
And first and foremost, we need to know if you do the Twitter.
I don't.
Okay. Any of your students use Twitter?
I don't know. I'm not above that sort of thing.
Okay, very good. Because, you know, we have to start tweeting from the show. So we want to know if anyone's going to be paying attention. And I guess it won't be you.
Not me.
Okay, so today you and I are going to be talking about genetic versus environmental factors in psychopathy.
Yeah, that sounds
Does that sound
good.
Familiar? And it's not like we just put this thing together a half hour ago, is it?
Only a little bit.
Okay, so what do we know then about genetic factors in psychopathy?
Okay, well, the first thing I want to say is we shouldn't say genetic versus environmental factors, because we know that there are genetic contributions to psychopathy and environmental factors, and the two aren't really in conflict. But, right, because you can have both.
Right.
But there is now pretty good evidence that genetic factors contribute to individual differences in psychopathic traits.
Let's see. Did you have any studies you wanted to talk about specifically about that, or should I move on?
Well, well, I'll just say a little bit about it without getting into too much, you know, detail.
Okay.
You know, there have been several different studies with independent samples, and all of the studies are consistent in showing that there is a genetic contribution to psychopathy. The one thing I'd want to say about this is that the studies have used somewhat different methods, and that's a good thing. That means that the result generalizes across different research methods. In particular, you know, some of the studies have been done with self-report measures of psychopathic traits, and some of the measures have been done with teacher ratings of what are called callous and unemotional traits in young children in Great Britain. So the fact that we get the, you know, the same general finding, I think, is pretty persuasive. But these studies also indicate that there's a substantial amount of variance due to what are called non-shared environmental factors.
Mm-hmm.
So,
did you want to explain what those are? Or?
Yeah, sure. so what that generally means is events that happen that make encourage different twins to be different from each other. And I should say that all of these studies are twin studies.
So you get a pair of twins, identical twins, and when you talk about the shared versus the non-shared environments, typically the non-shared refers to whatever it is in their environment that they're maybe spending time apart in or influenced differently, perhaps maybe different friends, social circles, that sort of thing?
That's right. But one of the limitations of the twin method is that it's hard to really specify the nature of these non-shared environmental factors. So really all we can say is, I mean, and if you want to get into the limitations of the methods, we can do that too, but all you can really say is that the genetic factors are substantial, they are replicable across different methods and different samples, so we know they're important, and they don't account for all the variance. There's a lot of variance left, and so people attribute what's left to environmental factors. But we can also say it does not look like the environmental variants are things that are, you know, in common between twins in the same family. For example, it's not, you know, that the family has, I don't know, a better income or a worse income, or that the parents are, you know, mean or harsh versus generous and warm,
right,
that kind of thing. Because if they were equally warm or harsh, that would affect all the kids in the family similarly.
Right. Okay. And so you're saying that that's one of the major limitations in this area of study?
Well, you know, as the methods get more sophisticated, there are more and more people looking at this, and so we're certainly seeing more sophisticated designs. It's been argued by a number of people that gene by environment interactions are probably important for a lot of forms of psychopathology, but these haven't really been looked at for psychopathic traits yet. So the idea there would be that there could be some kind of a, you know, specific kind of interaction between having, for example, certain kinds of trauma, either early in life or even in the womb, and that could affect people with certain genetic characteristics more than others.
Right.
But we just don't know about that yet.
And in research, when we talk about interactions, especially between gene and environment or anything else, we mean that, okay, the genes have some sort of influence on something, and then the environment may also have some sort of influence. But when we put the two together, there's the mixture of the two somehow produces an effect above and beyond either one alone.
That's right.
Okay.
Good way to put it.
I think I read that in one of your articles, actually. So what evidence is there that environmental factors are related to psychopathic traits?
Okay, so to back up, again, there's much less evidence bearing on environmental factors related to psychopathy, but certainly one of the interesting ideas that's out there is that we know environmental factors are related to, you know, getting into trouble and juvenile delinquency and even adult crime. And so a popular notion has been that environmental factors are related to crime, or maybe to what we call externalizing, you know, disorders like conduct disorder or things like that.
Right.
But people would say not to psychopathy per se.
And
what's happened in recent years is that some people are arguing that actually environmental factors make a difference even for psychopathic traits.
Okay. Is it okay? Is this a good place to take a quick break? Dave?
Oh, yeah. Any time.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. We'll come right back because I know we started late.
All
Aftermath
right.
Radio. We'll be back right after this.
Hi, my name is Bob, and I'm a psychopath.
Hi, Bob!
Bob!
Do you know what a psychopath is? Do you have one in your life? How would you know? Join Dr. Robert Shugg Mondays at 4 p.m. for Aftermath Radio and get the facts about psychopathy.
All right, we're back. Aftermath Radio. We have on the line Dr. Dave Kostin, professor of psychology at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science, talking today about genetic and environmental factors in psychopathy. Is it genes? Is it the environment? What causes psychopathy? What leads to it? That's kind of what we're discussing today. And when we left off, Dave, you were talking about environmental factors.
Yes. And so a number of studies in recent years have suggested that environmental factors may be related to psychopathy as well. I have one kind of a caveat I have to say before we get into specific findings.
Okay.
Which is none of the studies that I am ready to tell you about today are behavior genetic studies. So these are just, I don't know, what you might call regular studies. They look at correlations between certain kinds of events and psychopathic traits. And whenever you look at studies like this, if it looks like you're seeing a connection between some environmental factor, for example, it might be exposure to violence or physical abuse or something like that, and psychopathic traits, you can't entirely rule out that this association reflects some kind of hidden genetic mechanism.
Right. And just to piggyback on that point, when Dave mentioned behavioral genetics study, we're talking about sort of the new trend in genetics studies where we're trying to identify specific genes that may possibly be related to a behavior or a trait. And you're saying that the studies you're going to be discussing are not that.
That's right.
Okay. Great. And that any sort of relationships we see are not necessarily indicative of a direct sort of gene behavior relationship because there could be other things at work.
Yes.
Okay.
So there have been some studies, as I mentioned earlier, that have linked for example, child maltreatment with psychopathic traits, and there's been a popular notion that these do not reflect dimensions that are specific to psychopathy. So I think we've made the distinction in some of your previous shows between the different dimensions or components of psychopathy. And are your listeners familiar with all of the four factors of the psychopathy check?
I think you and I have been over those at least once or twice. But if you want to just mention them again briefly, that would be good.
Just really quickly to review, the interpersonal and the affective components of psychopathy are often considered more specific or core features of the syndrome, whereas the lifestyle and the antisocial features are sometimes considered more generally related to, you know, getting in trouble and having difficulty getting along with people.
Right.
And so so one of the questions has been, would some kind of traumatic events be related to scores on the interpersonal and the affective features? And so just as a, for instance, in one of the studies from my lab, we looked at psychopathic traits in teenagers. So these kids, you know, are still growing up, and they may not grow up to be adult psychopaths. They, you know, they may grow out of it, but that hasn't been established yet. But we have seen correlations between child maltreatment and not only the, you know, the more generic or lifestyle and antisocial features, but also correlations with the interpersonal and the affective features.
Okay.
And where it's been most prominent in our data, of course, we don't know if this will generalize, is for emotional abuse, as specifically related to the interpersonal features of psychopathy.
Interesting. Okay.
Now, there's one other kind of environmental factor from this very same study. This was done by my student, Cody Schraft, who probably would not want her name mentioned on the radio.
Well, it's a good thing you did then.
Yes. She looked at also at exposure to violence in the community. And this is something that Eva Kimonis also has looked at in a separate study, using a different measure of psychopathic traits in youth. And like Eva Kimonis, Cody and I found that exposure to community violence is also associated with psychopathic traits. And in particular, we found some evidence that it was associated not only, again, with psychopathic traits, but with the core interpersonal and also the affective traits of psychopathy.
What would be, in terms of defining exposure to community violence, how would you define that, or what did that look like?
Well, it's a self-report scale, so it's subject to some bias, but people indicate whether they've had certain kinds of experiences, and they these are divided up into what people call direct victimization, for example, getting robbed, getting mugged, getting beaten up on the street, could be getting hit by a car, versus witnessing violence, such as seeing something, you know, seriously bad happen to someone else.
Right. Okay.
And we find that both of these things are associated with psychopathic traits in kids. And again, some of the core or specific components of psychopathy.
Right. Okay, great. And then you had something to say about family structure as well, possibly.
And I should say this last finding that I mentioned from our study is not yet published, so I hope it's okay to talk about it.
I'm sure it's fine.
The newest study is also not published yet. The one I had mentioned to you. This was something that was presented at the psychopathy meeting up in Montreal.
Right.
And my students looked at the presence of a biologically related father in the home early in life, and they also looked at the presence of a stepfather early in life. And I should say, I counseled my students not to look at this because I told them, well, you may find something, but anything you find will really be related to crime. It won't be related to psychopathy per se.
Mm-hmm.
To my surprise, I was wrong. They found a specific connection to psychopathy. I don't have the findings in front of me, but the general finding was that presence of a biological father early in life was associated with lower psychopathy scores. So it was really the absence of a father early in life that seemed to be related to psychopathy. And we ran an analysis to see, could this just be, you know, a relationship with antisocial personality disorder, but not psychopathy. But we found that even after we controlled for antisocial personality disorder, it was still there.
But Dave, couldn't the argument be made, I'm just playing devil's advocate here, that if the biological father was psychopathic, that would have some sort of effect either genetically or environmentally on the kid?
Yes.
Did you look at that in any way? Or?
Well, again, we didn't, in this study also, we didn't look at genetic factors per se, but keep in mind, if a biological father had psychopathic traits, right?
Right.
Well, I guess, yeah, you could make the argument that, right, a biological father with psychopathic traits would be more likely to leave the family.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
And so it may be that the father absence really was a function of genetic, underlying genetic factors.
Got it.
I think that's a legitimate possibility.
Okay. Did you want to move on to your fourth point then, in terms of environmental factors having less of an impact on kids with psychopathic traits?
Well, that's okay. That's a whole separate discussion, and I'm not sure we'll have time for it. But we can start it and then see what happens. So there is another popular idea that, and this is related to the same idea that environment. You know, people have typically argued environmental factors are probably not important, and again, I'm suggesting, well, it's time for probably time for another look at that idea, based on the stuff we've already talked about. But an argument has been that, environmental, bad things in the environment are more likely to have a harmful impact on kids without psychopathic traits than on kids with psychopathic traits. And so now there are a number of studies which seem to suggest something like this. For example, harsh parenting or inadequate parental monitoring, things like that,
right.
Not keeping track of your kids, these are both associated with more kind of conduct problems, getting in trouble, at school, getting in trouble with the law. And so a number of studies have been done, some by Paul Frick and his colleagues, looking at whether these factors would have more of a bad impact for people without callous and unemotional traits than with callous and unemotional traits. Does that make sense?
Sure, sure does. So you're taking a kid who's callous and unemotional, and these adverse environmental things don't, for whatever reason, don't seem to affect them as much as a kid who doesn't have them. I think that makes sense to me when I say it out loud.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what they looked at, and that is what they found. It looked like the kids with the callous and unemotional traits were pretty much equally likely to get in trouble, to have these kinds of conduct problems, regardless of whether their parents were harsh or were kind of poor at monitoring.
Is that because, Dave, for lack of a better word, these kids are already so bad, that whatever happens in the environment isn't really going to make them worse? Is that what's going on, or am I oversimplifying it?
Well, I think that is a possibility. But the theoretical perspective is not so much that they're already bad. I guess it is a cross-sectional study.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking at quality of parenting and behavior at the same point in time. So it's a legitimate interpretation. But the theory would be that some kids, who are biologically predisposed to be getting in trouble, are going to be less susceptible to parental influences.
Right. So we're speaking more toward the biological as opposed to the environmental in that specific case.
That's right.
Okay.
But the interesting finding is that when people have started to look at other kinds of parent-child variables, they're coming up with some different findings.
Oh, okay.
Have I got time to give you one quick finding?
One quick one. You got about a minute. Now I know you want to talk about limitations, too.
Well, we'll see how it goes. But some researchers in, I believe it's Australia and New Zealand, have been looking at this and have found that individual differences in parental warmth are also related to getting in trouble, conduct problems. But what they find is that where parents are higher in warmth, the kids with callous and unemotional traits are especially less likely to be getting in trouble. So it looks like how warm parents are, kind of, how nurturing and how much they kind of reach
right.
out to their kids, can make a big difference for kids with maybe some signs of psychopathic traits.
So moving forward, that might be some sort of, like a practical implication for this finding, is maybe working that into some sort of intervention.
That's right. And again, we have the same limitation that when you see something that looks like it's an environmental factor, you don't know for sure that there's not an underlying genetic reason for it, but it's an exciting finding.
Good, good. Okay, well, Dave, we're going to have to wrap it up. Maybe we can pick this up again on a future show.
Yes.
Great. Okay, well, thanks for being with us tonight.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
Talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There you go, Dr. Dave Cossin. Professor of Psychology at Rosalind Franklin University of Medicine and Science. And that's about it for today. Next week, we have Dr. Paul Babiak coming on talking about bad bosses.
Oh,
have either of you two ever had a bad boss other than me?
No. We can talk more about that next week.
Is that her way of kind of giving me the shovel there?
No, not you.
Okay. In the meantime, please do call us, leave us voicemail, 562-912-3541. Skype us at aftermath.radio. You can leave messages there. And as always, email us at aftermathradio@kbeach.com.
And tweet us at aftermathradio.
We will be tweeting during the show. And that will not be the sound effect we'll be using. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week. Dr. Robert Chuck for Aftermath Radio here on K-Beach.
You've been listening to Aftermath Radio, production of the K-Beach radio station at California State University, Long Beach. Produced in association with AftermathSurvivingPsychopathy.org. Your host has been Dr. Robert Shug. Your producers have been Brian Frederick, Chantel Fahmy, and Gurjeet Brar. Join us next Monday at 4 p.m. for another exciting episode. If you or someone you know has been victimized and you'd like to talk to someone, call the Cal State Long Beach Counseling and Psychological Services number at 562-985-4001.